Hello, Ready to Run listeners. This is Lindsay Hine. I'm the founder of Sandy Boy Productions and the host of the podcast, I'll Have Another with Lindsay Hine. And why is everyone yelling with Lindsay Hine? And we are so excited that Two Before is supporting all of the shows in the Sandy Boy Productions podcast network. What is Two Before? It is a natural sports performance superfood made from New Zealand blackcurrant berries, which boast exceptionally high antioxidant levels proven to enhance athletic performance. A little bit sweet, a little bit tangy, this berry will help you get more out of the work you put in. Blackberry currants improve endurance by increasing blood flow, making it more efficient for the body to pump oxygenated, nutrient-rich blood to the muscles. You can kickstart your recovery by reducing muscle soreness and managing inflammation and strengthen your immunity. Immune-boosting antioxidants and naturally occurring vitamin C are in the black currant berries, okay? So you just drink this 30 to 45 minutes before your workout. You combine their powder with 4 to 8 ounces of water, juice, or electrolyte mix. I just use water and shake it up. I've been using this before intense workouts and love how it's making me feel. And you all can try it out and get 30% off. Two Before is offering an exclusive limited time offer to the listeners. 30% off for 20 packs plus free shipping when you use the code Lindsay at checkout. Just go to twobefore.com. That's the number twobefore.com and use the code Lindsay at checkout. All right, I will hand it over to your host. Enjoy this episode of Ready to Run.
Welcome to the Ready to Run podcast. I'm your co-host, Efren Kabalius, and I'm a sports medicine physician.
I'm your co-host, Kurt Roser, and I'm a physical therapist. We're based out of the Boulder, Colorado area and have a passion for working with endurance athletes of all abilities. The goal of our podcast is to engage in thoughtful discussions with athletes, coaches, and clinicians to share knowledge within the field of sports medicine and inspire progression in the sport of running.
We hope to empower individuals to navigate injuries, reduce injury risk, optimize training and performance, and provide listeners with the tools needed to get ready to run.
You'll be able to listen to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you enjoy listening to podcasts. Subscribe and leave a rating and review to let us know what you think and what you'd like to hear on the show.
You can also follow us on Instagram at Ready to Run Podcast, as well as our website, readytorunpodcast.com. Welcome back to the Ready to Run podcast. A few of our recent episodes have focused on bone stress injuries of the sacrum and hip, both of which are trabecular bone stress injuries that are can't miss diagnoses. We'll continue along the lines of discussing high-risk bone stress injuries as we work our way down to the foot and ankle to discuss another type of stress injury that you don't want to miss, calcaneal bone stress injury. We'll talk about how we identify these injuries, as well as prognosis and treatment strategy. To start with, these are commonly mistaken for plantar fasciitis, and depending on the location, these can also mimic insertional Achilles tendinopathy. And while some may classify these as low-risk injuries, more recent literature has characterized these as more of a high-risk injury because of its composition, which is rich in trabecular-type bone. As we've discussed in previous episodes, trabecular bone is the spongy inner layer of the bone. Most of the calcaneal injuries we see are often associated with slower healing times and slower return to sport. In practice, I've also observed that those who had returned to running too soon more often than not sustained recurring injury or prolonged injury. So what is the calcaneus? The calcaneus, or heel bone, is the largest bone in the foot. It has articulations with the talus, superiorly, and the cuboid, distally. There are several important muscle and tendon attachments, including the Achilles tendon at the posterior calcaneal tuberosity at the back of the heel, and the plantar fascia, which originates on the plantar calcaneal tuberosity on the bottom of the heel. So where do these injuries typically occur within the heel? Well, the calcaneus is composed of predominantly trabecular-type bone with a thin cortical outer layer. The trabecular structure runs in an arc, extending from the subtalar joint to the posterior cortex. And we'll show a picture of what this looks like on our Instagram page. It's an important point to highlight because a majority of calcaneal stress injuries will occur on the posterior aspect, with the fracture line running perpendicular to the trabecular bone lines. Calcaneal stress injuries can also occur in the middle of the bone at the base of the heel, near the insertion of the plantar fascia. Now, this location is easy to miss because it mimics the symptoms of plantar fasciitis. And we'll get into more of the clinical history in just a second. The third location where these injuries can occur is at the anterior superior aspect of the calcaneus, near the Achilles tendon. And this location can mimic some of the same signs and symptoms of an insertional Achilles tendinopathy. So let's discuss some of the risk factors. One of the proposed mechanisms of calcaneal bone stress injuries is due to eccentric pull of the Achilles tendon at its calcaneal insertion with repetitive heel strike. Similar to the sacrum and the hip, the calcaneus has a high content of trabecular bone, and low bone mineral density has also been observed to be common with this injury. In terms of presentation, symptoms typically occur several weeks after a change in frequency, duration, or intensity of exercise. Depending on the location, patients may have pain along the posterior, the medial, or the lateral aspects of the heel. However, instead of behaving like a tendinopathy where pain typically starts at the beginning of activity and warms up, the pain will typically occur with weight bearing and impact activity and often worsens throughout. In terms of the physical exam, the signs that we see here are not often too obvious. And one way we can test for this is to perform a calcaneal squeeze test. This is performed by positioning the hand on both the inside and outside of the heel, squeezing the bone to see if it elicits pain. Another test we can do is palpate the Achilles and plantar fascia origin. And with all other stress injuries, we can also try a hop test, but we also know that this may be nonspecific in terms of its sensitivity and specificity. So we really need an MRI to diagnose these. Similar to other bone stress injuries, X-ray findings may often lag behind the symptoms by several weeks, but can still be important to look at some of the bony anatomy. The most common type of injury pattern that we see is a sclerotic line that runs perpendicular to the trabecular lines of the bone. Similar to what we've discussed in previous injuries of the bone, anywhere a tendon inserts, stress fracture can occur. This could be due to the repetitive pulling action. Also on MRI, you may see changes at the plantar fascia, but you'll also see the stress injury as well. And one of the key things I always tell my residents and fellows who are with me in clinic is that you never really want to inject the plantar fascia in a runner without first ruling out a calcaneal stress injury. You know, in one instance, I had a patient who was clinically diagnosed with plantar fasciitis without obtaining advanced imaging first. And this was seen by another practitioner. They received a corticosteroid injection, ran 18 miles the next weekend, and then developed worsening pain, had trouble walking, just daily activities. And at that point, an MRI was obtained and had, in fact, showed a calcaneal stress fracture. So this goes back to one of the lessons my mentor taught me, and that we should always know what we're treating before we treat it, especially if we're discussing any sort of intervention, such as an injection, which is really not a benign procedure and can have consequences if we're not taking the proper steps to come to an accurate diagnosis or have at least ruled out serious injury with advanced imaging studies.
Hey friends, Lindsay Hine here, founder of Sandy Boy Productions, host of the podcast I'll Have Another with Lindsay Hine. And we are so excited to have Sidekick Tool joining the Sandy Boy Productions podcast network as a sponsor. If you have not used Sidekick Tool yet, let me tell you, it is an amazing tool for recovery. You can just use 3 easy steps for pain relief to help you get back to doing what you love. The Sidekick Tool can help you with shin splints, neck pain, hip pain, shoulder injuries, Achilles tendinopathy, knee pain, IT band pain, back pain, so many things. It is skin safe and it's effective. The unique edge works deeply into your muscles without causing any damage. It's an effortless massage, and the tool's weight handles the workload, and the versatile shape works on the full body. I use Sidekick Tool on the bottoms of my feet to avoid plantar fasciitis. And I know a lot of professionals like Molly Seidel and Sarah Hall use this tool. There is a long list of benefits to muscle scraping. The therapy stimulates multiple mechanisms to decrease pain and promote recovery. And the good news is you all can check it out. Just go to sidekicktool.com/RTR and use the code READYTORUN for a 15% discount. All right, friends, enjoy the rest of the show.
So now if a patient isn't getting better and you're doing everything correctly, then we have to ask, well, what are we missing? In terms of progression, it's important to refer these injuries to a sports medicine physician or a foot and ankle orthopedic surgeon. Not necessarily that they will need surgery, but that they should at least be evaluated and have the proper imaging obtained. Now, these injuries tend to be very stable and less likely to progress to full fracture or non-union as compared to some of the other stress injuries we've discussed. However, I have encountered 3 cases in 10 years that did progress to a full fracture, and one of which actually required surgery. That patient fortunately had a good outcome after surgery and was able to return to a full return to run at their previous level. So now in terms of treatment, most calcaneal bone stress injuries have a propensity to heal with conservative treatment. But one of the questions we always ask ourselves is, you know, do we put a boot on this patient or do we not? Because of the nature of them, I do tend to recommend the patient, you know, be able to bear weight as tolerated with the use of a walking boot for up to 6 weeks, depending on the severity of the injury. Once the pain resolves, the patient is then weaned out of the boot and then may start participating in non-impact activities. And then starting at 6 to 8 weeks of initiating treatment, then we can begin a gradual return to run progression. Now, these timelines are not set in stone, really just used as a guide, and really tend to focus more on how the patient is functioning and progressing as we build tolerance to bone loading. So you want to get this patient with physical therapy, optimize mobility, strength, and coordination, especially if the athlete required an extended period of time in a boot to let the injury heal, because one of the consequences of being in a boot is that you can develop some stiffness in the ankle joint or some weakness in the calf. So we want to make sure that we address that before sending this patient off to return to run. Calf and Achilles loading can stress the area, so I want to introduce these gradually. And if the athlete returns to sport too soon, or before addressing some of these underlying risk factors, we can see a pattern of recurring stress injuries. As we mentioned too, given that these tend to be more associated with energy deficiency, I do like to screen these patients, or at least have them evaluated by a registered dietitian. And if this is someone who's had a repeat stress injury, a DEXA scan would be warranted to evaluate for any metabolic bone disorders that could lead to weakening the bone and recurring injury. Interestingly, by the time this episode comes out, there is a new updated model of relative energy deficiency in sport. The IOC came out with a new consensus paper. That's the 2023 IOC consensus paper on relative energy deficiency in sport. And there's some pretty cool new updates that you'll want to check out and we'll probably touch on in future episodes. So in summary, because these injuries are often insidious in nature, it's important to have a high index of suspicion in order to promptly detect these injuries and get the athlete into the proper hands. You'll want to refer these injuries either to a sports medicine physician or foot and ankle orthopedic surgeon who can evaluate the injury, order the proper studies, interpret the findings, determine the risk of further injury, and make an appropriate treatment plan with the other members of the team. We want to make an athlete's return to running as timely and uncomplicated as possible, and we hope that this overview provides you with the awareness to recognize and understand these injuries and to empower you to navigate your way through these injuries.